This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. This may be just me, but I suspect that as you go about your day-to-day life, the global supply chain is not something you give a lot of thought. However, the COVID-19 pandemic has upset that supply chain to the point that it likely has had an effect on at least one or two things you do. From shortages of toilet paper early in the pandemic to the current lack of computer chips that go into vehicles, which makes renting a car a major investment, managing the supply chain is now a bit more top of mind. So did you know that you can get a university degree in supply chain management? To learn a bit more about what goes into that degree program, I spoke to Scott Keller. He has been on the logistics faculty at Penn State University and Michigan State and is now a professor of supply chain management and logistics and department chair for the Department of Commerce at the University of West Florida. I asked Dr. Keller how long a degree in supply chain management has been a thing.
Sure. So 15 years ago, I came to West Florida and just brought two classes in, one transportation class, one logistics class, and basically taught the fundamentals of logistics, classes that I taught at Penn State and Michigan State. The students really gravitated to it, and so we moved straight from the two classes into a certificate program, and then that certificate program kept growing, and our students began to get really good jobs and well-paying jobs. And, you know, not too long ago, I would say it was probably about 6-7 years ago, we started thinking about a standalone supply chain degree. Prior to that, it was a specialization within our marketing degree. And so now, fast forward, we have a standalone supply chain logistics management degree here at West Florida.
Just off the top of your head, how would you define supply chain to someone who just walked off the street?
That's always the number one question, isn't it? What is it, right? I usually will say boats, planes, trucks, and trains. I heard that somewhere before. And it just kind of rolls off the tongue pretty well. But supply chain manages the movement and flow of goods and services and everything that you can think that's attached to that. So the information and the documentation flow and the responsibility flow and the cash flow of goods and services as they move from where they are obtained to the point where they're consumed.
And I imagine like any chain, if one of those links is not as strong as it should be, you got trouble.
Absolutely. If you have a link that's weakened or if you have a link that is a bottleneck, you're constantly trying to identify where is the bottleneck and where is the bottleneck now. I mean, we may have roving bottlenecks in some of our processes. I think the key is knowing your supply chain, being able to visually understand what are all of, we call them nodes and links in our supply chain. Those nodes and links are suppliers and suppliers of our suppliers and the suppliers of our suppliers' suppliers all the way through to our customers and our customers' customers. Many times companies, even some of the largest ones that you know, they will only have visibility of their product from their, we call them first tier and second tier suppliers. So their immediate suppliers or their supplier's supplier. But beyond that, they lose visibility in the supply chain. So when you have one of those weak links and it's beyond the first or second tier suppliers, you may not know that that link, that weak link exists until it's broken and now you have to really react to that catastrophic supply chain event maybe.
Well, we certainly had one of those recently, and we'll talk about that in a bit.
Absolutely.
But first, if someone graduates, when someone graduates with this degree, what are they now, you know, what are they now able to do?
That's cool, because I'm now doing interviews with some of our graduates, have been for quite a while now since we moved to online classes and that sort of thing. It's a way to keep our alumni connected with our students. And so that's a great question. We always say, okay, so what's a day in the life of Adam today? And so today I spoke with Adam, and he's up in Cincinnati, and he just started a new warehouse operation for one of their computer and technology clients. And so Adam had to, over the last several weeks, figure out how to lay out 1 million square feet of warehousing space He had to lay out the processes. He had to help lay out based on velocity and based on volume that's coming through the facility. They had to think about their mechanics, their racking systems, and all of this type of assistance that will help that product move through that facility and then ultimately get to the customer. But then a few weeks prior to that, I was speaking with Lauren, another one of our graduates who's in Miami. And she's managing the cost functions for a large ocean freight company. And so she tells them what that ocean freight voyage is costing that company. And she evaluates those costs, and then the next voyage, she evaluates those costs, gives them feedback, and they make some strategic decisions. But then you have another student, former student, John David, who is a new regional vice president for a company called Crane Logistics out in Houston. He started there as a leadership development, LDP, Leadership Development Program, I guess it is. His mentor was the president of the company. They assigned a mentor, and he was the first college graduate for that company. And 10 years later, he's the vice president. He's in charge of the whole Houston operations. And that company manages anything from oil and gas, whether it's components, whether it's imports or exports, to Harley-Davidson motorcycles, distribution of that product throughout the U.S.
So it sounds like any one of these graduates could jump in at some point along this entire chain.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, they could be a buyer. And so they are negotiating prices with a supplier. That supplier could be a supplier for aluminum cans for a software beverage company. Or it could be Monty, who is working for the soft drink beverage company, and he's managing 36 drivers out in the field every day scheduling deliveries. Or it could be another company that maybe one of our students is managing the reverse logistics. What do we do now with the empty cans or the empty bottles? And how do we recover some of that usable material and get it back into an equitable supply chain?
This sounds like the type of thing that the average person wouldn't give two thoughts about until it gets messed up.
Until it gets messed up. And actually, many times, people are a part of a supply chain, and maybe they don't even know it. And so if they're placing an order, they're part of the supply chain. If they're managing their inventory levels and counting to see how many units we need to order next week, if they're looking at damage and they're trying to decide, okay, do we donate this product, do we destroy this product, or can we sell it in the condition it is? That's all supply chain. But when it breaks, you don't get your soft drink. You don't get your apparel. You don't get your timing belt for your automobile. You don't get the new wheel for your bicycle. You don't get all of these things that we're accustomed to having.
Well, now we're talking about not getting chips for cars and things like that. What did COVID do to the global supply chain?
The reason that's a great question is because it is so multifaceted. When I tried, and I tried to think about what's the one thing that it did? Well, let's see. It made everybody go home and stay away from each other. Well, how did that impact the supply chain? Well, you had nobody to manage the processes in the flow of materials or finished goods. So you didn't have anybody there to tell the product to move. Well, when that product didn't move, it sat somewhere, and it represents money. So somebody owned it, but it was sitting there. And so it was creating no value. In fact, many times it was losing its value at that time period. So when we start back up our processes, well, then we have this maybe distressed product that's in the supply chain that we can't use anymore, or it has less value than it did. Oh, and by the way, if we get rid of it, we've got to replace it with something. But further back up the supply chain, we don't have any inventory coming to us because maybe those plants aren't up and running yet. So it was a combination of people and processes and machinery. Going into this, we probably needed 80 to 100,000 new truck drivers. And now that we have all of this demand that was pent up during the stay-at-home time period, demand has grown so much that it has exceeded the supply of the tractor-trailer capacity that we have out there. And so now we not only need 80 to 100,000 truck drivers, new truck drivers every year, we probably need 150 to 180,000 to manage this new demand that's now a surge because people are ready to buy and they have a little bit more of that spending money.
This seems like the type of thing where international boundaries don't mean a thing.
Wow. You know, the international boundaries by their nature make supply chains more complex because you have to have agreements and you have to have documentation that's acceptable to the host country and to the receiving country. And then you have to move the freight, right? But wow, when you start thinking about that type of freight moving across boundaries, you're just trying to get it across as fast as you can now. Let me give you an example. And I've been reading some of these stories. I'm trying to keep up with it. I'm trying to give all of my students real news right away as soon as I can. I read an article the other day that that said, you know, we've got containers that used to cost us $3,000 to $4,000 coming from China to the U.S. Well, now it's $20,000 for that same container. A container, let's say, for example, is a 40-foot, it's basically a trailer. And so that container now costs, in some instances, 500% more than it did prior to the pandemic. Okay, so now what does that mean? Well, it comes filled with product to the U.S. to fulfill this demand that we have, and also thinking about the holiday season coming up and the buying season coming up. Well, that when we empty that container in, let's say, Long Beach, California, the owners of that container can make more money if they turn it around empty and send it back to China empty, all cost, right? There's nothing paying that freight of that empty container back to China. Mm-hmm. They'll fill it back up, charge 500% more, and send it back to the U.S. It's cheaper for them, in some instances, to send it back empty to China than it is to unload it in Long Beach, truck it to Iowa, fill it up with product from Iowa going to China, trucking it back to Long Beach and sending it back to China. That goes against some of our supply chain principles. Our supply chain principles say, fill up your container, your equipment, move it the furthest distance you can with the highest capacity that's allowed on that piece of equipment, and that's the most efficient way to move that product at the lowest cost per unit. Well, now I'm telling you, ship an empty container back to China, and that's going to be your best way to make more money.
Well, that's where academic theory collides with real life at times.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Still to come, our conversation with Scott Keller continues with a look at how long it may take for the global supply chain to get back to normal. That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to The Best of Our Knowledge's podcast or download the WAMC radio app to listen on demand anytime, anyplace. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett, and our guest is Scott Keller, a professor of supply chain management and logistics and department chair for the Department of Commerce at the University of West Florida. We're talking about the global supply chain and its program that has a degree in supply chain management. The COVID-19 pandemic caused big problems for the supply chain, so I asked when we might expect to get things back to normal.
Yeah, the latest report that I saw, and when I say reports, I'm trying to read the trade journals that have some of the very best and most recent information. But I saw an article that mentioned the capacity for trailers is going to be really, really tight until 2022, mid of next year. Now, that's a best guess as to right now, right, as where we stand right now, as to where that capacity will be. The auto chip manufacturers and distribution, you know, I'm like you. I went down to the auto shop to take my truck in the other day, and I actually asked them, are you guys moving? And they said, no, we just can't get chips. And so I knew that it was a problem. I've read about the problem. I understand that those critical components can shut down a supply chain. But wow, it's right here, right now.
So you've got real-time things to, you know, teach about in about 5 years.
You do. And you can tell them. I have so many activities that I can ask them to think about now. I can say, okay, well, how has your life changed? And you can just talk with me about how your life has changed over the past year. And I would guess that 50% of the things you mentioned would be supply chain related. Try it.
All right,
you did the automobile chips. I can't get a new automobile. I can sell my truck now for, you know, the price of a new truck. You're probably eating at home more. Mm-hmm. And so that changes the consistency of how the buyer purchases. Well, your distribution companies, I had mentioned previously that I had worked for a distribution company that managed for Procter & Gamble and Dial and Ralston Purina and other packaged goods that we have at home. They are now packaging their products differently because these products are now being sent directly to the consumer rather than to the grocery store where the consumer usually purchases and so forth. I was reading another article that said, you know, we have 30% more direct-to-consumer distribution of our product than we had prior to the pandemic. That's 30% more going to the home. It's not going in a large quantity, the most economical way, to a distribution center and then handed out from home. Sometimes it's coming straight from the manufacturer to the home.
Cuts out a middleman, though.
It can, or that middleman's responsibility has changed some. Because that product may also come from that middleman, but that middleman has to be well informed as to what that product is needed and what quantity is needed so that they can move quickly to fill that order if that manufacturer identifies that this middleman here has that product in stock and they can turn it over in 24 hours, get it to the customer's home. If they can't, then they'll have to ship it from some other location in their network. And that middleman may no longer be very viable for that client.
Academically, do you see this as a degree program expanding around the country, around the world to other schools?
I do. And, you know, this degree started in the university systems. You can trace it back probably to the 60s. And I worked with a man named Don Bowersox, who really built Michigan State's supply chain program, and that's known as one of the first major programs in a university system. Well, from there, we had Ohio State's program and Penn State's program and Arkansas's program, and now we have a program at Auburn. We have a program at North Florida. We have a program at West Florida. So we are seeing more programs build across the U.S., what we're probably seeing even faster is more supply chain courses are being taught across a majority of the universities now. And 30 years ago, that was not the case.
Will the demand increase, do you think? We're speculating here. Will the demand increase because supply chain is, because of this pandemic, become part of our everyday vocabulary?
I think you hit the nail on the head. I do remember one time talking with one of my bosses, and they said, well, what can I do for you? And usually you say, well, nothing, you're doing great, thank you for all of your support. I said, visibility. Give us some visibility. And I really believe that that's how people get connected with such a program. We know marketing. It's been around for 100 years. We know management. We know finance. Those are very well understood by our parents and grandparents as some of the foundations of business. Supply chain and logistics, those are terms that are relatively new. So getting the word out and letting students and parents of students know that your student can get a great job before they walk across the stage in supply chain, in purchasing, in managing the flow of goods through distribution centers, in the planning, in the management of it, in the sales aspects of it, in the finance aspects of it. And so I really do think that people understand that supply chains are really important to our society. And I think people want to get a degree in something that's important.
Well, given everything you just mentioned, that sounds like a pretty busy student.
It is busy. It is a busy student. And I'm hoping, you know, that our COVID experience can get behind us, because I want to get our students back out into these industries to see what they could be doing. Just the other day, I went down to the UPS distribution center here, and it was fascinating to see how they manage all of the products that come through that center. And by the way, some of them are going back out and they're going on the air freighter that's at our airport, and they're flying out within a 24-hour period. And so when a student can get inside a factory or a distribution center or an air freight hub, it really opens their eyes to, so this is what supply chain management's all about.
What didn't we talk about that we should have?
There was something today that Adam, one of our former students, he's up in Cincinnati, starting up a new warehouse for Crane Logistics up there. And he mentioned management of people is really important. And I said, well, tell me about that. He said, well, you have to empathize with folks, and you have to kind of see things from their perspective when you're asking them to do certain types of things. And he said, yes, we have our mandate from headquarters and we have our processes that are standardized, but we really have to understand that employee. And I thought that was really excellent. We do teach some of that, but Adam's learning that firsthand now. And I think that that's a wonderful thing. Logistics and the management of supply chains not only manages equipment and products, but it manages people. And people are involved. And I think with today's situation with COVID, we have to really be more empathetic when we're trying to manage people for the benefit of our clients, our customers, and our own company.
Dr. Scott Keller is a professor of supply chain management and logistics and is department chair for the Department of Commerce at the University of West Florida in Pensacola. There aren't really very many people who are completely debt-free. And some debt is nearly unavoidable while living a normal life. But is all debt ethical? That's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
How much debt are you carrying? I'm Dr. Lynn Pascarella, president of the Association of American Colleges and Universities. And today on the Academic Minute, Kate Padgett-Walsh, associate professor of philosophy at Iowa State University, takes a humanistic approach to something most of us share.
The morality of debt is simple, many people think. Don't take on too much debt. Pay it off. End of story. But most people also know that this simple idea doesn't fit into the real world and people's actual experiences with debt. How does the morality of debt change when we start taking those realities into account? One reality is that household debt is at staggering and unprecedented levels in the U.S. today. Studies show that this debt is taking its toll. It's eroding physical and mental health, it's contributing to social isolation, and it's even preventing people from starting businesses. This debt is especially punishing for people of modest means, who often live paycheck to paycheck and can only get through emergencies by taking out loans with high and often ballooning interest rates. Many people's debt today also reflects historical injustices, and it reinforces racial and wealth gaps instead of closing them. Finally, many people, even those in the middle class, increasingly are finding today that debt is the only way to access basic goods and opportunities like healthcare and higher education. A second reality is that most debts today are not the relatively simple person-to-person interactions that were once the norm. Most debts today are owned, processed, and serviced by large financial companies. These companies are not primarily in the business of treating debtors with respect and decency, as many billions of dollars in fines and enforcement successes have underscored in recent years. Historically, it was primarily lenders who were viewed as immoral for taking advantage of desperate people, especially the poor. And yet today, we continue to hold debtors to moral standards that financial companies regularly violate. These realities reveal some of the injustices that come from clinging to an outdated moral framework about debt.
That was Kate Padgett Walsh of Iowa State University. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
The Academic Minute is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, in partnership with the Association of American Colleges and Universities. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to WAMC.org and click on the programs link. While you're there, subscribe to our podcast or any of the other WAMC or National Productions podcasts. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@WAMC.org. And you can find us on Twitter at TBOOKnowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at WAMC.org.